Now, there could also be what we could call structured noise, where there is a certain pattern in the noise. For example, in biomedical images, there could be X-ray grid artifact, which could be in the form of parallel lines in the case of parallel grids. I showed you an example earlier. A grid or frame used for image registration and calibration. Sometimes in imaging, you could place a reference grid, and that could be an artifact. It is expected to be outside the frame of the image, outside the range of the image. The reference grid could be typically outside, but if it is superimposed, then you'll have to perhaps remove that grid. Labels indicating patient identification, positioning, and imaging parameters. The mammograms I showed earlier had some parts that would indicate if it is the left breast or the right breast or craniocaudal view or mediolateral oblique view, and there could be a label with the patient's name, which in this case has been removed, but it could be present in the original image. Now, that is by design. It is an artifact in the sense it is not part of the chest image or the breast image in the case of a mammogram, but it is there by design of the imaging protocol. Then there could be surgical implants such as staples, pins, screws, or some other metallic implants within bones, for example. There could be a shaft introduced. And these may be known. Typically, they are known in advance, so the patient would know that such things are in the body. But in the case of a child who has swallowed some metallic object, then that object may have to be detected, and then it is not an artifact, but that's the target to detect. There is power line interference in signals, 50 hertz or 60 hertz, but it is not common in biomedical images. The power line interference typically doesn't get across into image data. So this is one artifact that we encounter in biomedical signals significantly, but in images, we are fortunate to not have such kind of an interference. Then we have physiological interference, where the artifact is caused due to the normal physiology or normal physiological process that is happening concurrently with the process that you are trying to investigate. A patient or subject may not be able to exercise complete control on all of the physiological processes and systems that are active. For example, when you are taking an X-ray image of the chest, you're asked to take a deep breath and hold breathing for the few milliseconds that the X-ray beam is turned on. But in the case of a pediatric patient, that may not be possible. Or in the case of a patient who is not well or is not conscious, that is not possible. So the effect of breathing on a chest X-ray image is a physiological artifact. The object is not fixed. It is moving, so you're not getting an image of the same object, but it is a variable object that is integrated over time. The effect of breathing, peristalsis, and movement of material through the gastrointestinal system, that could also be beyond, or that is certainly beyond the effect of control. Peristalsis, for example, is beyond the control of adults as well. The effect of cardiovascular activity on CT images of the chest. In the case of a projection image, such as a posterior anterior image, the exposure is fairly short, so the effect of the beating of the heart is not significant. There is some blurring, but that is not significant, and the area of interest perhaps will be the lungs and the ribs and so on. Whereas in the case of a CT image, the time period of data acquisition is of the order of a few seconds or many, many milliseconds, and then it is possible that the heart would have gone through several phases of the cardiac cycle over the duration of the acquisition of the CT data, where you acquire projections at various angles. The projection data would then be inconsistent because the object has changed from one angle of the projection data to another. The object or part of the object, the heart, has moved from one phase of contraction to another phase or has gone through multiple phases. The effect of pulsatile movement of arteries in digital subtraction angiography. In subtraction angiography of the brain, I mentioned that a contrast medium is injected. First you take a reference image, and then you inject the contrast medium, and after it has passed through and stabilized in the arterial system of the brain, you take another image, or you may take multiple images and then subtract them. Although the head could be held clamped, and it is presumed that nothing inside the head moves, the brain doesn't move on its own like the heart does, but the arteries within the brain that carry blood will be carrying blood in a pulsatile movement according to the pulse at 60 or 70 or 80 beats a minute. And along with that pulsatile movement, there will be a small movement of the arteries, and that movement causes artifacts in subtraction angiography. I'll show some examples later. So that is a physiological artifact. Anatomical details such as the ribs in chest X-ray images. If you are interested in the lung tissue, the ribs could be seen to be an artifact, but that is part of the normal anatomy. And the skull in brain imaging may also be considered to be artifacts, because what you are interested in is in the brain, the skull is in between and you can't help it. If you can somehow remove the effect, detect them and remove or compensate somehow, it is worthwhile trying to do that so that you get a compensated image. I'll show later on how you can separate high-density part of the image from low-density using dual-plate imaging. So that comes later. But if you're interested in lung tissue and you get a chest projection image, the ribs show up. The ribs could be considered to be unwanted interference, although there is no simple way of removing the ribs. There are other types of noise and artifact. Systematic errors caused by geometric distortion. If the lens in the camera is a poor quality lens, especially a zoom lens, as you zoom, there could be some distortion. But that is systematic, and knowing the lens, knowing the parameters of the imaging system, you may be able to compute the nature of that distortion. Miscalibration of the system, nonlinear response of the detectors, but that could be calibrated and you could compensate for that. So in that way, it is systematic. But as part of the system, you could make measurements and then characterize that response and compensate for it. Sampling and quantization. Quantization error could be represented using a certain distribution, as I said, a typical uniform distribution. The effect of sampling could be aliasing error, and if that is present, you cannot compensate for it. But that is a systematic error in the sense that is by design of the system. A few more types of noise. Punctate or short noise due to dust on the screen or film or on the examination table. When you take X-ray images, if there is dust of high density, then that could appear as a point source of noise in the image. It's not random in the sense you don't get a large number of them, but there could be a few of them present in the image. Scratches on film. If you have an old film that you need to scan and do an archival, if the film has been scratched at places due to rough use or due to contact with some sharp objects on a table or on a desk, then such lines or such artifacts could appear as intense line segments when you scan, when you backlight the image and scan. And that could appear as a linear part on the image, but in effect or in reality, it could be a scratch. Short noise due to inactive elements in a detector array. Most CCD arrays that you buy in cameras, would have some dead elements. When you buy a camera with 10 megapixels, there is no guarantee, or in fact, the guarantee would be that a certain number of them would be dead. But by interpolation, by knowing where the elements are dead, because after manufacture, that particular detector could be tested and the dead pixels could be labeled, and those dead pixels, the values of those pixels could be fixed after data acquisition of a particular image by interpolation. So many cameras will interpolate and put in values into the positions of dead pixels, where by design not by design, due to the manufacturing process and subsequent testing, these positions are known in advance. Salt and pepper noise due to impulsive noise. Salt and pepper, the name is given because if you have a large value against a black background, that particular isolated value appears as a white spot on black background, and that looks like salt has been put there. And pepper, if there is a black spot on a white background, then that appears like pepper, so it's called salt and pepper noise when you have black and white pixels that appear in lighter and darker areas of the image. So these are impulsive noise sources where the value is not small but very large, but both on positive and negative sides. Film grain noise due to scanning of films with high resolution. The size of the silver halide grains used on film to detect light and to capture the image is of the order of a few micrometers. If you scan an image to very high resolution with a laser beam, which is also of the order of a few micrometers in diameter, then you could be measuring or detecting each clump of silver halide grains on the film. And then that information would be related to the structure of the grain on the film rather than on the image. Of course, on a larger scale, if you average, you get the image information. But if you scan an image to very high resolution with the laser beam or pixel size approximating the size of a few micrometers, which corresponds to the size of the silver halide grains, then you get noise that is called film grain noise. And that is applicable to X-ray images too. Punctate noise in chest X-ray images or mammographic images caused by cosmetic powder or deodorant. When women go for mammography, they're typically instructed not to use any deodorant or powder because the grains of talcum powder could appear as calcifications in the breast, depending upon how and where they are projected. So powder, cosmetic or talcum powder, could cause artifacts that appear like calcifications in mammograms. Superimposed images of clothing accessories such as pins, hooks, and buttons, typically they're avoided. When you go for imaging, you're given this paper shirt that you wear that has no other components such as buttons and pins. But if that is not taken care of, then there could be some of these other items that come in, especially if it is an emergency situation where a patient who is injured is just taken in and an image is taken initially before clothing is removed and some other hospital issue is put on. So those are some other types of artifacts. Now, when you have random processes used to characterize random noise, then we have seen how we can compute certain measures from their PDFs or from ensembles. So random processes may be characterized in terms of their statistics that you may derive from the PDFs or from temporal or spatial or ensemble statistics. Now, there are a few definitions that we need to recognize. A random process is said to be stationary in the strict sense or strongly stationary, those are standard terms used, if its statistics, and by statistics it means all measures of all orders, are not affected by a shift in the origin of time or space. So changing the origin does not affect the statistics, such as mean, standard deviation, and if it is not normal, higher order statistics, then it is stationary in the strict sense or strongly stationary. In most practical applications, and in the case where you have a Gaussian distribution, only the first order and second order averages are used, mean and standard deviation, or mean and variance. A random process is said to be weakly stationary or stationary in the wide sense if its mean is a constant and the autocorrelation function depends only upon the difference or shift in time or space. So mu f x1 y1 is equal to mu f. and phi x1 plus alpha y1 plus beta is equal to phi f alpha beta. I already mentioned this property, but now we are seeing this in the context of the definition of stationarity. So the autocorrelation function is now a function of its shift parameters alpha beta only. And then when you take the Fourier transform of that, you get a function of frequency only and not of the space coordinates. So the power spectral density does not vary with space. So if you have an image, and then for different parts of the image, the power spectral density remains the same, then it is a stationary process over that space. A stationary process is said to have another property that is known as ergodicity, or the process is said to be ergodic if the temporal statistics computed are independent of the sample observed. Suppose you have a number of observations of the signal and you compute certain statistics from one observation based on the time samples, that is temporal statistics. Take another observation or signal of the same category, compute the same statistics, and if they are the same for all the samples, then the system is said to be ergodic, or the process is said to be ergodic. The same results are obtained with any sample observation fkt, which means you don't need a large number of observations, you don't need an ensemble of observations, you just make one observation of the signal, and from that you compute your statistical measures. And that would be the same as ensemble statistics. So the time averages of the process are independent of k, mu fk is equal to mu f, phi f tau k is equal to just phi f tau. All ensemble statistics may be replaced by temporal statistics in the case of an ergodic process. So that is an advantage, and there are an important and special type of random processes that are stationary. But the term ergodic is typically applied to functions of time, and I have not seen that particular term used in the context of images. Although to replace temporal by spatial, perhaps the same idea applies. But that word has been used mainly in the context of temporal signals. On the other hand, if the process is non-stationary, then the statistics vary over time or space, depending upon whether we're talking of temporal functions or spatial functions. The statistics of most images vary over space. So what I said earlier, of a large image, where statistics remain the same, that would define a process that is stationary, but most real-life images vary significantly from one part to another. So just if you look at this scene, there on the wall you have a certain pattern, it has certain statistics, and I come here and there is a window with some periodic pattern here. So that pattern is different. One part with you and another part with you, the statistics are different because of the nature of the clothing you are wearing or any other object that is in the image. So this is a non-stationary scene. But if I take a small part, then within that part I could assume that the image is stationary, or the part of the image is almost stationary. So if you can break an image into parts where each part is broken based upon certain statistical characteristics, then each part is stationary and the image is considered to be quasi-stationary. It's almost stationary in parts. On the whole, it is not stationary. But within small parts, it is stationary. And this is applicable to physical or physiological systems that have limitations in the rate at which it can change characteristics. Now, this scene is an artificial scene. It is constructed in a certain way, and one could artificially place things that will change the characteristics of the scene, the room here. But a physical system cannot change within a certain interval, or in order for the state to change, a certain time interval is necessary. So the rate of change is limited in a physical or real life system due to some smoothness conditions or the capability of changing the state. For example, our heart rate is limited to the range of, let's say, 50 or 40 beats a minute on the low side. We're not concerned about the low side, but on the higher side, to let us say less than 200 beats a minute. An adult heart rate, adult human being can have a heart rate of not more than 200 per second. So, I'm sorry, 200 per minute. So that is a rate limit, and heart cannot go through the whole cycle at any faster rate than that, beyond which it would be an abnormal rhythm known as fibrillation, and that leads to death. So that is not normal physiology. So given that, you can say there is a limit on the rate of change, and the same applies to the entire body. You cannot have a step change in density. The change in density is also smooth. So the ideal step function we write, trickle engineering as U of T, doesn't exist in real life unless it is a manufactured object with a perfectly milled edge. A real life physical object or physiological object would not have a step edge. So there are some limits on the rate of change of density in a real life object and the rate at which it could change shape or size during normal course of action or activity. Given this, then we can break the signal into parts. So techniques designed for stationary signal analysis could then be extended to be applied to non-stationary signals by breaking them into parts. Within the part, each part is considered to be stationary. If it is a temporal signal, this is known as short-time analysis. If it is an image, you would consider it to be block-wise stationary and apply sectioned or block-by-block or moving window processing. And within each block or window, you consider the image to be stationary. In the case of speech analysis, speech is non-stationary. We have vowels, we have fricatives, and we have plosives. And as I am speaking, the nature of the speech signal varies at a certain rate. The faster I speak, the faster it varies. But we can break the signal into parts that are stationary, into phonemes or into vowels and fricatives and plosives and so on, and analyze each part separately. And then, in the window that you have broken, the signal is considered to be stationary. And because you're taking small pieces in time, it is called short-time analysis. If you cannot break the signal adaptively into phonemes and the various types of sounds, then you could just break into small segments of, let us say, 10 milliseconds or 20 milliseconds or 30 milliseconds each. And then you're simply assuming within that window, the signal is stationary. And that is fixed short-time analysis or short-time analysis with a fixed window. The window size could be adaptive if you can manage to perform adaptive segmentation. In the case of images, you just break the image into small pieces, and each piece is assumed to be stationary, and that is a window, a rectangular or square window. But you could also break the image adaptively into parts by performing segmentation, and you could say all of that part is the background wallpaper. That part is the door or window panel. This part is the window, and this part is some heater or something. And each one will have its own characteristics, and you process each part separately. And that is adaptive windowing, where the section is of adaptive size and shape. So here is a simple illustration where you have a block. That image is broken into one block, which is that, another block, which is that. So it is block by block processing, where you could compute some statistics from that window or in this window. So I'm just showing a 5x5 pixel window and a 3x3 pixel window. So when you're processing this pixel, you would take that window to be its neighborhood. And statistics computed from that neighborhood could be used to process this pixel and to derive an output value for that pixel. And for some other pixel, you take the window. Now, as I mentioned, the cardiac system has some limits regarding the rate of change. But there is also another interesting aspect about the cardiac system, and that is that it is repeatedly happening event with a certain rhythm. There is an inherent rhythm, and that is cyclic. The heart goes through the same phases of contraction over and over again. Contract and pump blood and relax. Contract and blood and relax. And so on. The rate may not be steady all the time. Depending upon the state of the subject, the heart rate will vary and the activity. But from one cycle to another, there is a certain rhythm. And that rhythm is related to the heart rate. And you could break the signal in parts that are cyclostationary. The same taps repeatedly in, for example, the ECG or the heart sound. On the whole, the signal is not stationary. But if you take one cycle of the signal and then take one phase of the cardiac cycle within that cycle and go to the next cycle and take the same phase within the cardiac cycle, they will be the same from beat to beat to beat to beat. So this is known as cyclostationarity. For example, the heart sound, we have what is called the first heart sound and the second heart sound. As heart contracts, you have a sound that begins the contraction called S1, the first heart sound, and then there is second heart sound that begins the relaxation phase or diastole. The first sound initiates systole or contraction, and the second sound is just prior to diastole. So these two sounds are important indicators, and in between the two sounds, there could be murmurs that are high-frequency sounds if there are valvular defects or defects in the septa of the heart. Murmurs would be high-frequency sounds that are typically random in nature. Between first heart sound and second heart sound, the heart has changed its characteristics because the muscles, the state of contraction of the muscles would be different, the amount of blood present would be different, and so on. So the characteristics of the sound would be different from first heart sound to second heart sound. And if there are murmurs in between, those characteristics would be different. But the first heart sound from cycle, the first heart sound the next cycle could be expected to be the same in statistical characteristics. The waveform would be different, but the nature of the sound in terms of, for example, the spectral density would be the same from one beat to the next to the next. May not be the same over days or months or years because of the changing state of health of the subject, but from one beat to the next sort of beats, you would expect the first sound to be the same, the second sound to be the same, and so on. This is known as cyclostationarity, where cyclically you observe the same behavior in the system from one cycle to the next. Then if you can break the signal into parts, and associate each part with the corresponding cycle of the rhythmic activity, then you can make use of the statistics in this manner. So although as a whole the signal is non-stationary, there are parts that repeat in characteristics in a cyclostationary manner. You could make use of that in what is called gated blood pool imaging of nuclear medicine images. I'll show you an example of this later in averaging to remove noise at the end of this chapter. In gated blood pool imaging, nuclear medicine images are taken of the heart. A certain radioactive isotope is injected that will localize within the heart, and then in order to obtain a good quality image using a gamma camera, you need to acquire the counts of the emitted gamma ray photons over a number of seconds. And over a number of seconds, the heart would have gone through several cardiac cycles. So if you just take one picture over 10 seconds, that would be useless because the heart would be simply shown as a blurred blob of activity in the image. Whereas if you were to break the data into parts, where the images are acquired at the same phase of the cardiac cycle, using the ECG as a reference, the ECG is the electrocardiogram, get that as an additional channel, and break the interval between within a beat into a number of parts, let's say 8 parts. And within each of these intervals, you detect the photons and put in separate images, let's say 8 images. Each image is averaged over multiple cardiac cycles. but gated to the particular phase of the cardiac cycle. And then you get 8 pictures averaged over a number of beats, but each picture represents one cardiac phase. And then you can view that as a movie, and you obtain a movie that simulates effectively one cardiac cycle, but it is averaged over multiple cardiac cycles. I'll show you this example later on.